Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, y'all, welcome back to Building Great Sales Teams. I've got my man, John Allison here. He's the author of Relentless Sales, and he's a regional sales director with Boston Scientific. Those guys do medical device sales over there. And he's been a TMO of the year, rookie of the year, founders, best of 2 years combined. And he's currently leading a team of 10 sales reps. John, welcome to the show, brother.
Doug, thanks for having me, man. Excited to be with you.
Hey, I'm so glad that you can come on because I did a little research and I saw one of your recent podcast episodes where you were talking about some advice that your dad gave you about not making your numbers or the scoreboard your identity. And yes. I really wanted to kick the episode off with that, kind of give everybody, you know, what this episode's going to be like, because I think you dropped some tremendous value when you went through that story.
Cool. I appreciate it, Doug. I think as salespeople, there's so much pressure on our shoulders, right? We're out of the front lines. We're out there getting after it every day. And the reality is this, we become so conditioned to think that we're our number, right? Our sales number. And we're way more than that. I mean, the goal is to be excellent in everything we do. But my goal, what I talk about in our book, Relentless Sales, is really to help people understand that their identity is so much more than just a sales number. And meanwhile, encouraging them to be excellent in the work, but to help them understand it's a much bigger picture than that.
Yeah, you were telling a story about, you know, you were up for this award and your dad just kind of like had to center you a little bit and make sure that like, hey, and one of the things that you said that I appreciate because I'm a Christian. Yeah. One of the first things he said to you was that you were a child of God. Can you kind of rehash that conversation a little bit? Because I thought it was so cool.
Absolutely. So in chapter two, I talk about this story, but it's really our chapter on identity. And I lead the book that way on purpose because I was going for rookie of the year my first year in sales for med device company. And then my second year, I was going for rep of the year. So rookie rep, I was fourth going for number one. And then if I was to win that award, it would be a really prestigious award. And it would be recognized with his founders. And so my dad, as a good father kind of does, sensed that my identity was a little out of whack. So he's like, hey man, like, you're my son, you're an Allinson, be great in your work, be excellent. But man, if you don't get that award, like, dude, your identity is not in a sales award. So he told me this word that really changed my life. He's like, dude, live from your identity, not for your identity. And I feel like it's so powerful and it's a message that every salesperson needs to learn. Like, be excellent, go for it. But man, we are so much more than our number.
No, that's real. I mean, one of the things I talk about a lot on the show is my 20s and building my sales business and running and gunning and really putting business first. I would say my family second and then God third. Right. And so for you, especially now that you're pretty seasoned in this, you've been doing this for a while, 15 plus years of sales experience and seven of them in management. How are you balancing kind of I'm not even going to say balance. How are you handling work and life? I mean, if you're a top producer in sales, you're probably working more than 40 hours a week. Totally. So maybe when you were doing that, how were you managing it? And then how did you manage it now?
Yeah. So I think really owning the morning routine is key. So getting up early, making sure you're it's spending time with God, getting my coffee in, getting my water in, getting some exercise in, right? Figure out what routine works for you. And then that really seems to work for me. Loading up on the front end of the day with positive affirmations, biblical affirmations, things that, you know, because it's such a taxing job. We're firefighters, you know, we're out there every day. We get loaded with problem after problem. And as managers, we get all the problems, right? We get everyone else's biggest problems. And so for me, I got to front load my day with some good stuff. And then what I'm trying to do at a personal level, I have a 7-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son. I mean, just being really intentional to squeeze in one day a week. I got to pick my kids up from school and drop them off. And so that's my goal this year is to be super intentional with them. Cause as you know, family can be the first casualty with work, you know, with grueling schedules.
No, absolutely. We spent the first part of the year putting together our schedules for the year. And the first thing that went in the calendar was our biweekly date night and our weekly day date, right? And our biweekly day date. So we spend intentional time together once a week. And then after that, it was the kids' dates. So once we have three kids, once a quarter, we each have a one-on-one date with each one of them. So it ends up being three dates each over the quarter, you know?
Yep.
What's nice is now when I schedule a work conference or I schedule a consulting trip or something like that, as long as it's not conflicting with any of those dates, I know that I've already scheduled that intentional time with my family. So it helps a lot doing that. So when it comes to one of the things you mentioned earlier is like you're fighting all the fires now, right? And I would imagine that's because you have your salespeople focusing on sales, and when things hit the fan, you have some type of system to where they can kind of say, "Hey, John, I've got this going on. Can you handle this so I can keep going out to the field and selling and doing what I do best?" Right.
Correct. So,
what does that look like for you when it comes to the salesperson's scope? When do they know, like, "Hey, I need to lean on my manager," or "Hey, I need to lean on operations, fulfillment, the billing department"? How do you kind of train them to stay in the zone?
That's a good question. I think it kind of goes in phases. So when someone starts out new on my team, I do a little bit more handholding. I stay close to them initially. And then it gets to a point where I really start to empower. With 10 people now on my team, I don't have the bandwidth to not have other leaders. So I try to build other leaders, and I look at everybody I hire as someone that could exceed me in capability and leadership, all those things. I want to hire the best people possible. And so my team, we had a call this year and we talked about it. And I was like, we need to be figure it outers, right? Or we just need to figure it out, right? And so I really try to empower them to be leaders. I try to get them to figure it out. And one of the biggest pieces of advice that I learned from my boss, and probably the area as I was transitioning from sales individual contributor to manager, was learning to gather all the facts. My director is awesome. And he really sat me down. I was like, "Hey man, like you're killing it. You're doing well, but you're not getting all the facts before you're bringing them to me." And at first I was kind of offended, but when I sat back and thought about it, I was like, "Man, you're so right." So try to gather all the facts and then try to think the one or two solutions to that problem before bringing it to your manager. Yes. I really preach that on my team. I'm like, "Dude, bring me 2 to 3 solutions that helps me know that you actually thought about this problem before you brought it to me."
Right. When they're brand new, their reaction is like, everything's on fire, the world is ending, you know what I mean? And then you have to train them over time to basically self-assess, create some solutions. And then if they're still kind of stuck, then bring them to you. So that's huge.
Yeah.
So I guess with this, what inspired you to write the book? You know, at what point were you like, "Hey, I've got something here. And it's my own special sauce and mix that I want to kind of put out there"?
So a couple different things. Post-COVID, you know, did a little reflection time, right? That was a good time for us to kind of think. But this is the book. I mean, this is the book that I wish I had when I was starting 15 years ago. And thanks for the shout out there. I mean, this book is my personal playbook. And I started writing at the end of 2019. COVID kind of screwed things up and stopped writing during COVID. But afterwards, my buddy came to me and was like, "Dude, I showed him, told him what I was doing. He's like, "Dude, just tell yourself you're writing a book." And his name is Joe. And Joe really pushed me over the edge to kind of get it out there. He's like, "This book can help a lot of people." And so I was really encouraged. It was really good for me to write down my philosophies. And it just came together, to be honest. At the end of 2023, we just launched it, and it's been encouraging.
That's awesome. And are you thinking about writing another one? Is this one and done? Is this the legacy book and that's it? or what do you
think? No, I'm already kind of I've got the writing bug now. And so I think making it part of my life, you know, with kind of having that morning time of coffee, I jot notes down every morning. And for me, it's that continuous improvement. It's pushing myself to the next level. It's something that I want to become. A writer is who I want to become. So.
No, that's fantastic. What are some of the opportunities you've gotten from writing the book?
I mean, talking with great guys just like you, Doug. I mean, I'm making new friendships. My network is expanding rapidly, and it's really fun to just meet different people, encourage different people. I would say the most fulfilling, I've had several younger folks who are in sales, and they've reached out to me and they've said, man, like, this book is game changing. One guy said he referenced the sales process I outlined in chapter 6. And he's like, I got the job. You know, he's like, your book, he's like, I had the people skills, I had all, you know, the basics, but I didn't have a sales process. And he's like, what you outlined in chapter 6 was pushed me over and helped me get the job. So that was cool.
Without giving away chapter 6, can you give us a loose outline of what you typically like to do in your sales process? And I would imagine this is for like B2B more than anything.
Yeah, it is. And Todd Zog, one of my mentors and friends, actually allowed me to take his sales process. So it really is a trickle down. So I have no problem sharing it. And so I do feel like, you know, this newer generation of sellers need to go back to the basics, and sales process do work, right? Yeah. If as long as you don't make them bulky, as long as you're not robotic, as long as you're not weird with it, we need to have an understanding of where we are at all times within a process of sales so we can have consistent results. So, you know, it surprises me that a lot of people don't pre-call plan. Pre-call plan is number one in that step. And I truly believe that any good salesperson should be able to flip over a napkin at Starbucks and be able to just outline their process. And it doesn't have to be this process, but they need to have a process. And so pre-call plan, approaching the customer with rapport, relationships I talk about are everything in the book. And so pre-call plan, approach with rapport, identify pain is the only thing that gets people to move in this world. Mm-hmm. If there's no pain, you're not going to sell anything. And you might as well just in good faith identify that there's no pain and say, hey, maybe this might not be right for us. And there is a time in sales to walk away. Demonstrate value, advance the sale, close and follow up. And so that's as easy as it gets.
Yeah. Probably my favorite parts of that are the approach with rapport. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about a lot is warm with form. Nice. And, you know, this is a B2C sale, but it works in B2B too, where you're, basically building rapport through family, occupation, recreation, and materials, right? Mm-hmm. And so as you're walking up to the office or you're walking up to the house, whatever the case is, you're looking around for cues, you know, the fishing trophy, the picture of the family, or in the background, you know, they got their favorite things in the background. Like in my case, I've got my Bible, some books, and some weird oddities on top of my shelf here that are good. They're good conversation starters. And every now and then people will look back there and say, hey, what is that? Is that a dragon up there? What is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so they're just some easy ways to build rapport for people. Or, you know, I've got my closers only. So like my Glenn Ross reference, and it's rare that people get that, you know, because of the R word kind of throws them off and everything. But that stuff is a lot of fun. So, you know, obviously using those four items to like, you know, see the triggers everywhere and then bring them up and have a conversation, get that wall down, right? It's huge for that.
Right.
Absolutely.
And pre-call plan, I mean, don't underestimate that. You can, that pre-call plan, if you spend 30 minutes before you go meet with a prospect the next day, you look them up on social media, you do your research on them, it can make or break that next sales meeting. And so social media is a game changer. As long as you don't kind of fall into that trap of getting stuck in it, use it as a tool to help.
Yeah, it's tough. You do fall in it pretty easy. You know, like podcasts are a great example of it. I'll jump on somebody's social media to like research them and make sure I ask like good questions and everything. And then I'll find myself scrolling. I mean, it happens all the time. So what are, you know, there's a whole new wave of, you know, biohacking and cold plunges everybody's doing, and, you know, 75 hard and all these things. You're a fit guy. You seem to be in shape. What are some of the things you do to stay focused?
Yeah, I think fitness is huge. My dad's really taught me that from an early age. My dad's like 68 years old and he's out working the young guys constantly. So he's out biking, running, lifting weights. Nice. My dad was a pastor growing up and he'd be out lifting weights with his shirt off in the garage and people like, that's your dad. He's a pastor. And so he really set the bar for me on keeping fit. And so I'm a lean guy. I'm light. I try to just do as much weights as I can. So in the morning I walk, I've been kind of getting into the ruck walk in the morning this year. Yeah. So I'll throw a 30-pound ruck bag on my back and just go. And whether it's freezing, whether it's raining, whatever it is, I've kind of embodied that this year. And then just getting weights 4 to 5 times a week.
Oh, that's huge. That's huge. So, having a career in sales, one of the things we talk about a lot is education around taxes, investments, all that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Are you working towards something like that to where you have passive income? You know, when we're in sales, we typically have, you know, a nice income, you know, whether it be from overrides from a sales team or from our own commissions. And so where are you looking to kind of put some of that extra money in?
I mean, right now it's investing in the book side of things for me, speaking, all that. So I really want to give back. I've been grateful to have some success and I'm kind of moving from success to significance right now in my life. Okay. So I really want to give and I want to help that next generation of sellers. And right now it's through the book medium, but we'll see how that evolves. I mean, I'm kind of, that's just wise business for those people who do have those passive streams. But for me, I guess this book is that first step, but I didn't get into it, the book, for the money aspect. I got into this to really help back and get back.
No, I love that. And I love your answer too. You're basically investing back into a form of your business, right? Yeah. And if your long-term goals are to speak and to make an impact, then everybody knows the book is a starting point for that. You know, a lot of my friends have books out. They're giving me a hard time because I haven't written one yet. Because, you see sales leadership books out there and you see sales books or like there's a lot of personalities out there talking about, all right, this is the way you overcome this objection or whatever the case is. Like people are hyper focused on the individual sales versus like the team sales. You know, you manage a team of 10, you know that managing salespeople is a lot different than sales training. Those are two really different things, right? And so the big concept that I push and what I consult on is the sales program, right? Mm-hmm. The script, the comp plan, the opportunity structure, the scope of work, you know, basically outlining these things that make up our salespeople's, you know, day to day, as well as affects their compensation and their income and everything. And so I have been told several times I need to write a book on it already because it's a duplicatable process across several mediums and stuff. So it's definitely the next step for sure. Any advice for someone that wants to get into doing that?
Yeah, I love that. You totally should write a book. I think everybody has a book inside them, right? We all have a story. I think for me, Dropbox was something that I would share with my editor. And so, you know, don't look at it that you're going about this alone. I would find a creative that kind of has opposite skill sets that you have. And I joke about in the book, I talk about being a product of the public school system. And so my spelling was off and grammatical errors left and right and different things like that. And, you know, my editor saying, you might be doing too many capital letters in this book, right? But I write how I speak. So I think everybody should write a book. I think find somebody that can come alongside you to make that process a little bit more smooth. And what I did with my editor, Zach, is we just shared a Dropbox and he'd see me write an update during the week. He'd come over the top on a few things and say, I love this. I'm just rephrasing it. That would be the advice I would give is find a partner in the journey.
No, I love that. And it makes a ton of sense. And those people do it for a living. You know what I'm saying? So my whole thing is, and I'm the same way, I'm terrible with grammar, spelling, all those things. Cause my brain thinks faster than I write. You know what I mean? Like I'm like three sentences ahead of what I'm trying to put on a post or whatever the case is. So I run everything through, I write the post and then I run everything through ChatGPT it cleans it up for me. And then I copy and paste it back into the post, and then I'm good to go. And I sound like I can talk for a living. So
that's awesome.
So what kind of opportunities are you looking for in terms of speaking right now? Is there kind of a minimum you're looking for, like an event or something like that? Or are you wanting to go and speak to teams? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there? I mean, I think overall, I'm open to all of the above. I think the goal for me right now is to obviously stay excellent in my work. So that's number one. Yeah. And then, you know, as those opportunities arise, as a book becomes a little bit more known, we're getting it out there. It's been fun to see all the reviews on Amazon come in. But, you know, we really, any and all opportunities, if it's going to help salespeople maximize their abilities, I want to be supportive in that. And so where I have time outside of the busy schedule that I have, whether weekends, evenings, I want to be part of that.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the book's on Amazon, I saw. And you've got your website also, johnalwinson.com. You guys are interested in grabbing a copy of that book. And what's next? You know, I know you said you wanted to write more books. Are you looking at the next level of management in your company? Or what's next?
Yeah, I think always, you know, is that continuous improvement of, can I go from manager to director? Or we've got things called national accounts, corporate accounts. There's always exciting opportunities to kind of grow your career in med device. And so I'm looking to continue to do that while I write probably that next management leadership book is what I'm working on right now.
Fantastic. You know, one of the things that's been top of mind lately for me with my clients and then on the show as well is, you know, I like to call them minimum standards, right? Mm-hmm. And I would imagine in your industry, because of the level of sales that you guys are doing, it takes a while for y'all to hire, you know, in some other industries you hire pretty quick and then you fire fast, right? Correct. And so I typically put minimum standards in place in sales programs, you know, one sale a day, but they're typically more around the controllable activity, because you can like not get a sale as long as you're doing the controllable activity, because we know based on the formulas that we've created of the history of the company that if you make 100 calls a day, you're going to get one sale a day, right? Even if your skill set is very low, right? And so do you put anything like that in place with your team? Are you kind of focused on those controllable actions that they're doing every day?
Yeah, we do. And I think I kind of take Mike Weinberg's approach. He's the author of New Sales Simplified Management. Yep. Good friend of mine actually wrote on the back of my book a nice review. And so I take his approach that you kind of, at this point, we hire a high level salesperson on our team, right?
Yeah.
Normally with like 3 to 6 years of business experience. So a little bit more proven. So I typically get to activity when the results and things aren't there. But I do put structure on our team. Like this year, I kind of have three pillars that I'm focused on with my team to get them focused on the right products. And then I'm always preaching, you know, and highlighting the reps who are doing the right things. And so what's cool is when you create a good culture and you have the right framework, like you just kind of outlined, the results, you start building a team of healthy team and high performing team, right? Yeah. Healthy culture team. And then the high performance is something that most people who get in sales have that desire. Occasionally you have one or two that kind of find their way in that don't, but normally it kind of works its way out has been my experience. But I don't think it's a fluke. People don't walk into successful teams by accident. It's through the work and framework they create.
How do you know when it's time to cut a salesperson loose?
That's a good question. Obviously, in corporate America, there's a lot of protection, and there's things that we always try to do the right thing when it comes to finding a way to help them. You know, sometimes there's a personal thing going on. And so I think you should, before jumping to conclusions, you should really look every aspect and do everything above and beyond that you can to support them. Cause honestly, they're just like me and you, right? And we go through highs and lows. And so, after kind of exhausting every step, you know, sometimes people are on the right bus, but in the wrong seat too, 100%. You know? And so some sales may not be their thing, but the organization, they could be on the right bus. And so it's just shifting that seat to another spot. So I think, you know, it's heavy emphasis in those areas. And then occasionally and more rare, you have to just kind of say, hey, this is not working out. Right. But we try to do everything we can to prevent that, because most of the time, if you've done your due diligence in hiring, you've got a good individual. It's just making sure they're on the right seat of the bus.
No, I like that. And there's kind of two philosophies that I preach a lot. The first one is, you know, you cut them loose when you're doing a disservice to them. So basically, you know, they could be more successful, like you said, in another position or in another company or another product or another medium. You know, or maybe they're really good on the phone, but they're not a good person, or they get nervous and whatever the case is, and you're not able to train them up to that point. And then the second one is manager discretion. Right. And so, you know, people always think at first, man, Doug's cutthroat. He's got these minimum standards. Like, he's going to fire me as soon as I fall below him. And it's like, no, that's why you have a sales manager that's going to basically say, oh, well, you went on vacation last week. That formula doesn't apply. You know what I mean?
Right.
You were sick, or, you know, you had a family member pass away, or, you know, you're going through something personally, you know, and that's where the manager discretion comes in. So I couldn't agree with you more in your answer on that, for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I was just gonna say, I think having those accountability call check-ins too, right? There's a difference between coaching and accountability. And again, my friend Mike Weinberg talks about those in his books. First Time Sales Manager is one of his books that's really, really good. You know, and he talks about, you know, setting up a call just on accountability. And what we do is we do that once a month for my team, after the month closes, and we just check in and we get to activity after we talk about results, right? Results, if the results are there, you don't really need to get into the activity, right? And so if you create the right kind of framework around your team and follow good playbooks that are already out there, you can kind of create that too for your team.
That makes sense. How do you feel about virtual management versus in person? Do you have a nice mix of this happening, or is it like all virtual now? And how are you kind of adapting to that the last couple of years?
It's been interesting. At first, you know, I was kind of skeptical, you know, this post-COVID world that we were in, but now it's one of those things where I tell my team, hey, I can't be with everybody at all times. And so I try to spend a few days with each TM once a quarter. So I try to be 2-3 days in the field with each of my reps.
Nice.
And then in between that, virtual call. So I have one of my reps, she does a great job. She's like, hey, I'm bringing you on my laptop. We're going to meet this administrator of this facility that we work with. And then I'm like, hey, I'm John. Nice to meet you. And I wish I could be there in person. And honestly, I think the world's kind of adapting to it hey, this is kind
it's
of
not the that new, crazy.
The new now. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love it. But I love you're still making an effort on the in-person stuff, because it's weird. We're human. You know, and when we're not speaking to a screen, there's an individual in front of us. We tend to open up more. And when they open up more, there's more room for growth there. There's more room for training. There's more room for you to pour into them, you know. And so I always make sure that there's always a cadence in every sales program of in-person training, shadowing, whatever the case is. That pulse check, I think, is huge.
Yeah,
you can't really replace virtual, you know.
You can't, because you can look over at them like, how you doing? You know, put the work stuff aside, like, you doing all right? You can check in at that level. And a lot of times that's where the vulnerability, that's where true relationship and connection can kind of kick in, to where you're like, hey, I understand, you know, and they'll tell you, you know, they're having trouble with their kids or this, that, and the other. And you can kind of be empathetic and be a real, real human and help them out.
Absolutely. So last question, and I ask all my guests this. The first question is, what does legacy mean to you? And then the second one, or last two questions, I should say, what legacy do you want to leave behind?
Yeah, awesome. Love that. So what does legacy mean to me? I think legacy is something that exists beyond you, right? And as simple as, you know, Webster Dictionary as that sounds, like, it, you know, it is leaving the world better, right, after you're gone, you know, and I think that's my goal is to help salespeople be great now in their work, to build their confidence, to help them with their identity, right? When we know that this world is for a short time, and there's so much more, and there's so many more important things than just work, but work is very, very important. I think that's a lesson that is outlined through my book and is something that I do want to leave with the world, where I help them provide for their families. I help them be great in their job, but more importantly, help them and push them to God.
I love that. I love it so much. All right, guys, if you want to follow John, you can reach him on IG, LinkedIn, or Facebook. Just search his name, John Alwison. And also, you can find him at johnalwison.com. And you can also buy his book there as well and check that out. John, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Appreciate you so much for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, Doug, thanks for having me.
All right, let's get building.
Let's do it.